All right, so the big question of the night, the number one question that everyone wants me to ask and wants to know more than anything else is, if you eat a whole food, plant-based diet, and you exercise, and you sleep well, and you are emotionally healthy, and you avoid processed food and sugar, and you do just about as good as you can, are you heart attack proof, or is that just a slogan and sometimes you die of a heart attack or stroke, even though you eat a whole food plant-based diet?
Can I take with that one? So first of all, there are genetics. There are multiple SNPs, that single nucleotide polymorphisms that you could see in something called Mendelian randomization trials that will give you heart disease. They code for higher risk factors, particularly LDL cholesterol. I'm the co-author on one with Baron, such study with Brian Ferentz. And it'll talk specifically about the lifetime exposure to LDL cholesterol. And there's also the opposite, that whole thing of everybody's heard of at this point, you know, 10 years in, everybody's heard of the injectables, not the twice a year I was talking about, but twice a month. Those particular drugs, that whole science of PCSK9 inhibitors came about because people found that there is a gene that people were lacking, PCSK9 deficiency. And it meant that the LDL receptors were supposed to take the bad cholesterol out of the bloodstream, never got recycled. They just kept going and kept going, like the Energizer Bunny. Sorry, I just used a commercial word. Okay. And thank you for the green screen, Jay. My heart rate came down seriously when you did that. I appreciate it. As it turns out that that the PCSK9 deficient people, without recycling those and crunching down on those LDL receptors, the liver just keeps taking it out, and the people are having an LDL of 14, you know, and they never get any heart disease. So lifetime exposure to LDL is a big deal. And there are people with, you know, one of those bad SNPs I mentioned, or true homozygous or heterozygous familial hyperlipidemia. They really need to see someone. They really need to have all of that managed to make sure that their genetic risk doesn't overwhelm their lifestyle goodness.
Very well said. Very well said. I think when you look at some numbers, because I remember when I had my big revelation after watching Forks Over Knives in 2016, I remember doing a simple Google search and just kind of saying, what percentage of heart disease is preventable through lifestyle changes? And the big number that you see, the World Health Organization and other people's, they're out there, is 80%, 80%, 80%. And I mean, that's a big number, 80%, but it's not 100%, certainly nowhere near where you would say heart attack proof. And they don't define what lifestyle changes they were using to come up with that number. And I think that when you look at what Dr. Williams was mentioning, lifetime exposure, I think that's the key. A lot of lifestyle medicine experts really think that number is more around 90% or higher. I think Dean Ornish would probably tell you 98 or 99% preventable heart disease wise, but really the key is lifetime exposure. Starting when you're young, you look at these blue zones that live long and they eat whole food, plant-based predominantly. They're doing this from the day they're born, right? And so you have somebody that's in front of you that's already had an event, a heart attack, whatever. They've already had 40, 50, 60, 70 years of exposure to elevated LDL, animal products, inflammation. And now they're saying, can I make myself heart attack proof at this point in time after all this damage has been done? Ooh, that's tough. If there's really no clinical trial that randomized, you know, patients to whole food, plant-based diets and other lifestyle changes and follow them for 5, 10, 15 years after an event and showed that there was zero events that happened. I think the term heart attack proof was mostly popularized by Dr. Esselstyn's data, which was great data. And everybody, you know, obviously respects Dr. Esselstyn for all the great work he's done. It's not a randomized controlled trial. And it wasn't, you know, super perfectly designed in order to try to show a good outcome. He took 150 or 200 consecutive people that went through his program and called them up a few years later and said, hey, they had a heart attack or stroke. And there was a teeny percentage of people who had any events. And they're like, oh, it's almost zero. Here we go, heart attack proof. But I don't think that's enough to be able to say that you, if you did all the right things, especially after you've already done some damage to your system, that you can get your event rate down to zero. You could reduce it dramatically. No question about it. You can reduce your risk dramatically. You could probably, you know, decrease plaque burden and take a degree of stenosis and reduce it. But what the most important thing is preventing heart attack, preventing stroke, improving longevity, and improving quality of life, which we know, no question, a whole food plant-based diet and lifestyle changes can do that very, very, very well, but you know, not perfectly. So I never use the term heart attack proof in my practice for sure.
If I could sort of take a different slant on this, in my lecture I gave in this program, I said the number one thing that I'm able to, I think, provide to my patients in our visits is a sense of perspective. And so I think the very question you asked and the fact that that is the number one burning question is itself the problem, is because people are so focused on outcomes. And so when something unfortunate happens, they view it as a failure of what they have done. And more and more, I just find in my conversations with patients, I'm saying, you know, those are some things that are just beyond our control. And it's hubris to think, and it's ego to think that we can control these things. And I quote Dr. Williams. Kim, you can tell me now, but I quote him as saying, I don't mind dying. I just don't want it to be my fault. Yeah. Did you said that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. That's somebody put it on a cup.
Yeah. I quote you on that all the time because I have so many patients who are coming to me so discouraged because they feel like I've been doing this, I've been exercising, I've been doing this, and then this happened. I got some autoimmune thing happen, or I even had a heart attack, and they view themselves. It's not just, oh, some unfortunate thing happened despite I tried my best. That would be a healthy outlook. It's that I failed, the diet failed, the whole food plant-based fit. And I'm like, look, I may discover tomorrow that I have prostate cancer. I don't know. But what I can rest in good conscience in is I'm doing the best I can with the information I have available. And that is something to take courage and to take peace of mind in. And so the questions and the concerns that patients ask me give me an insight into their state of mind. And so rather than kind of play into that and focus on the outcome, well, okay, maybe here's what you can do to really reduce that to zero. And I'm like, let's take a step back. We don't know what the future holds. You can do everything right and unfortunate things can happen, but let's do the best with the information you have, and the rest is out of your hands. This, what I describe as this process of helping patients to go from to letting go a little bit.
Okay, I'd like to show you a video that was of some things that was said by Dr. Cousins a few days ago regarding some things, and I'd like to get your feedback based on your experience of what you think about it. So if we could show that video right now, I'd like to get the feedback of the doctors. So we're setting up this video, and he made a couple of comments.
He sees a lot of people with vegans with brain degeneration. I look at the high carbohydrate diet, which I don't support because it stimulates brain inflammatory pathways. Now, to me, this is a really important study, Journal of Alzheimer's 2012. I'm just going to read it because it's so important. Older people, and we're talking people above 60, eating a high carbohydrate diet. Get the word high carbohydrate, because we're told a lot in the vegan world that you want a high complex carbohydrate diet. People are talking about 70% carbohydrate. Yeah, well, here's the result. Have nearly four times the risk of developing mild cognitive impairment. So this is what David Perlmutter in his book, Grain Brain, I thought he did really good work. A diet heavy in inflammatory carbohydrates, which mostly they are, low and healthy fats messes with the mind in more ways than one. But let's say messes with the brain in more ways than one. So fat is the preferred fuel of human metabolism, and it's been that way through evolution until we started farming about 10,000 years ago. Next slide, please. Now, this is really important because along with this high complex carbohydrate diet, we just have this cholesterol fear. And this is one of the second reasons I think that vegans tend to get more Alzheimer's, because people with the highest cholesterol scored higher on cognitive tests than those with lower cholesterol levels. So this is my, I'm really talking more about cholesterol here, but Netherlands, Alzheimer's have lower amounts of cholesterol, free fatty acids in their cerebrospinal fluid. That is really important. As 2007, a study showed that people who regularly consumed omega-3, this is one of the supplements I'm going to talk about, they were 60% less likely to develop dementia than those who didn't regularly consume such oils. That's DHA and EPA. High cholesterol is associated with better memory function. And it's the preferred fuel for your heart. I mentioned the so atrial fibrillation, high omega-3, 85% lower risk of dying from all causes.
Any feedback you want to share on that?
There was a lot of things that were fired off there. And I think probably almost like a dozen different points, trying to synthesize a lot of those things one at a time. And I'll try to tackle one or two of them, and maybe you guys can try to weigh in on whatever else you guys can remember, because it was a lot to take in there. I think, first of all, when you look at terminology, there was one, the very first slide, you said all degeneration is from carbohydrates. Now, again, like Dr. Lim said earlier, making extreme claims is always decreases your credibility. You can never say all, you can never say something's proven, you know. So that is a concern. And we do, and then he says how fat was the fuel a long time ago, was a predominantly metabolic fuel source. And I, who knows, even if that is true back then, thousands of years ago, it's not true now. He said because of farming now with agriculture, now it's carbohydrates. Well, that's what we are now. We're not, you know, living thousands of years ago. That's the same argument people say, well, cavemen used to eat meat. It's like, yeah, well, cavemen used to live 35 years. So do you want to live 35 years? Sure, fine, eat meat. So a lot of those arguments aren't just valid just on those basis. And the whole brain health is not really necessarily my area of expertise, and the omega-3s, it is certainly a controversial, I wouldn't know it's a controversial topic. It's a topic that we wish we had more data on, is all I would say in regards to brain health. So, but having high cholesterol, improving your memory, well, then you die of a heart attack or a stroke after having the high cholesterol. So it's not, that's not really necessarily a good argument either, in my opinion. So you guys can tackle some of those other things that you guys caught.
Well, I think it's interesting. He talked about a diet high in he quoted Perlmutter, a diet high in inflammatory carbs and low in healthy fats leads to these, you know, degenerative issues and problems. But then the conclusion is, so fat is the preferred fuel. Wait a second. That's not the logical deduction, because there are inflammatory carbs, right? I mean, you just heard Dr. Williams and Dr. Lohm, when it came to salt, say avoid processed foods, which is probably the number one source of inflammatory carbs out there, these highly refined processed carbohydrates. A Oreo cookie is a much different kind of carb than a sweet potato that's steamed or baked. And to compare the two is to, I mean, it's ludicrous. So I think, you know, we have to be careful of these sound bites and these sort of kind of absolute claims. And once you, I mean, gosh, it's so easy. Once you hear someone, I've all respect for Dr. Cousins, but if you hear something that kind of a stretch, then it just means be cautious and don't take everything at face value. And also appreciate what a gift it is when you meet someone who is an expert, who you in general can take what they say at face value, because they are very careful with what they say. And what they say, they only say based on the evidence, and they're not going to overstretch it for the sake of getting more likes or more views or more press or anything. They are going to stick with the science, and those are rare, but they exist, and it's a real diamond when you find that. So I think what we just witnessed was a lot of half truths. But half-truths can take you down dangerous avenues if you just take it at face value as the absolute truth. And I think we're seeing a theme today of that it takes more work and it takes some nuance, but there's usually a bigger picture that you have to keep your perspective on.